Bird Dog's khaki shorts are just like your mother. They'll wrap you up and keep you comfortable no matter where you are. Their zipper pockets will securely hold all your things. They'll fondle you with a love you thought only your mother was capable of. Oh, and don't worry. These shorts won't call you a disappointment. You might even start to love Bird Dogs just as much. If you want to experience motherly love again, hurry to birddogs.com/MLB and buy a pair. They're selling out quickly, but they'll throw in a free Bird Dogs tumbler if you get there on time. That's birddogs.com/MLB.
Life comes with a lot of decisions, and it can be hard to know the right path sometimes. A therapist can help you map out what you really want so you trust yourself to make great choices and feel excited about the future. BetterHelp offers convenient, professional online therapy on your schedule, however you want it, by phone, chat, or video call. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/positive.
I see Rory McIlroy's face on my TV. USA Network. He is getting close to teeing off along with John Rahm and Justin Rose. And before they tee off, we have to bring back that John Rahm cut from yesterday because this is actually pretty funny. So producer Jay found John Rahm grousing a bit about how annoying it is to play with Rory McIlroy because McIlroy gets so much attention for obvious reasons. I mean, he's probably the face of golf right now. And in fact, he is standing on the tee box getting ready for his second round of the Open Championship. But Rahm is annoyed because of the fact that there's cameras everywhere. It's people yelling, people in his way. He specifically did not like how their first round finished up on the 18th hole.
I'm trying to walk and there's way too many people on my way and I can't go forward at my pace because they're on the way.
Simple as that.
Very simple. And then I'm walking off 18 and I'm trying to deal with my with the unlucky moment on 18 and there's somebody with a boom mic on my ass keeping up with Rory's pace and I can't go on my own pace. So yeah, it's just kind of the disregard that I existed.
They just disregard that I existed. Ah, it's a tough life to lead when you're one of the top golfers in the world.
I'm trying to walk.
And in fact, now John Rahm is on the tee box for round number two. The sunshine is out there. No, it's, what do we decide? 5 hour time difference from Eastern time zone, which is where we are on Friday morning at 5 a.m. So it would be at 10 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock, sorry, British Isles time across the pond. And Rahm has got some work to do. So Rory started this round at even. Rahm is plus +3, and a lot of the big names in golf have struggled a little bit, even though the conditions are pretty ripe for posting red numbers. As we talked to Matt Adams, who's actually on the course following a group, he might even be following this group. So I think as we watch the course of this first hole with this very high profile group, we might end up seeing Matt Adams, which is kind of fun. He was with us from the media center at Royal Liverpool about 24 hours ago. And there's an American who has moved into first place. Not that it matters on Friday, but he is atop the leaderboard. Brian Harman, already minus -3 through his first four holes. And so he's sitting minus -7. Coming up in a couple hours, this 22-year-old South African amateur who really stole the show in the opening round, Christo Lamprecht. He's a senior at Georgia Tech. So he's a guy who's an amateur because he's still in college. He qualified for this major by winning a tournament a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a week ago. And then Tommy Fleetwood, who's very well known there in Hoylake, England, because he is English himself. So those are the two guys sitting at minus -5 as Harman has leapfrogged them at minus -7. And then you've got a bunch of other guys who will be teeing off here in this next hour, as we mentioned. Rory McIlroy and John Rahm are now on course. Jordan Spieth had a really good opening round. Max Homa, he was at minus -3 after the first round of the Open Championship. Matt was right. He told us the conditions, the course being soft and the weather being relatively friendly, that it would open up the Open Championship for a lot of different golfers. to make noise early on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Glad to have you with us. Last hour, for the first time in my radio career, I had a guest from Auckland, New Zealand. That was pretty cool. It's winter down under, but we had a chance to check in with Stephen Goff of the Washington Post. He's covering the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and getting set for Team USA to make its debut down under. They will actually play there in Auckland against Vietnam coming up on Saturday, New Zealand time, but Friday evening here in the U.S. 9 o'clock. Is that what we heard? 9 o'clock Eastern time, 6 o'clock on the Pacific coast. Yeah, that's something to look forward to on your Friday if you're all about soccer or you just want to root for Team USA. Uh-oh, why do I have to sneeze? Make it stop. Make it stop. Look at the light. Make it stop.
Say pineapple.
What?
I've heard that. If you say pineapple from when you got to sneeze, it'll make it go
from
away.
The same person that told you that Threads was a threat to Twitter.
Good one. No, I just like it's one of those like urban legends, for common folklore.
Urban legends. I never in all my life thought I would hear you say the phrase urban legends.
Urban legend.
Of all of the things that I could imagine you saying, urban legend would not be one of them.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Give it a try.
Urban legends or pineapple?
Pineapple.
But why pineapple? Why not
something?
Why not mango?
No, it doesn't work.
Why not banana?
No, come on. Pineapple. It's something with like, I don't know.
Grapefruit?
Grapefruit, pineapple. That might work. Same.
No, that's what I said about banana. Pineapple, three syllables. Banana, three syllables.
No, banana doesn't work.
Banana's kind
of pineapple,
dumb.
Like the shape of the mouth or something to do with that. It's like the air intake. Some sort of science.
Pining away for a pineapple. A
lot of research has been done about this.
Or it could just be I have something in my nose. There's so much happening right now with me. My voice, the nose, just all kinds of things. Thank goodness it's Friday. Friday, peeps. Up and at them. It's After Hours on Facebook as well as on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Any part of the show that you missed, you can certainly access via the podcast. And we post the link on both of our social medias. Not Threads, because according to Jay, now it's dying. It was a flash in the pan.
I think it's dead.
Well, if that's the case, wouldn't Zuckerman be 0-2 on his last two big projects? Because Meta never took off either. The whole Meta universe thing did not fly.
I don't think that one's dead yet. I think he's got that one still in his back pocket, but no.
But it's not super popular. It's not like Meta took off and became the next Amazon Prime or something.
Might just be a little too early for the metaverse. I hope it just doesn't take off, but maybe the world's just not ready for it just yet.
I am never engaging in the metaverse.
I hope we don't, but I don't think he's done with that one. Threads is done. 5:08 on Friday the 21st.
Eastern time.
Yeah, it's dead. We're calling it.
We're calling it. Like we're in the emergency room.
It's done.
Calling time of death.
Yep.
Except you don't know that. We're not on it. So, of course, it's dead to us. But 100 million people signed up for it.
I would have been on it by now.
You would have? If it
Absolutely.
Was real? You would have used your vacation?
I would have had to, just for like work purposes. We both would have had to.
No. Yes. I'm not doing anything else with Zuckerman. I'm not. I refuse.
If that's where all the news was coming in from or all the stuff, that's where we'd have to go,
no,
right?
No. We'll just be newsless.
Just be newsless. What happened today? I don't know.
You should see the rain right now that's taking place down under. Holy cow. It's 49 degrees and it's raining and the winds are blowing 18 miles per hour. So one of the things that we heard from Stephen Goff of the Washington Post when he joined us from New Zealand is that it's cold there. He said not only is he wearing winter gear, but these players are having to bundle up when they're not out there on the field. And you'll see that a lot of them are wearing long sleeve jerseys. They're not wearing short sleeve jerseys. So yeah, it's winter in the Southern Hemisphere and Chile. It's chilly down
there. Wearing gloves, some of the players.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not supposed to touch the ball with your hands. You know that, right?
Soccer? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. So good morning to you. We're glad to have you. It is still summer in the Northern Hemisphere, and the boys of summer are still going at it. And for the Orioles and the Rays, beginning a critical four-game series on Thursday, actually had to play into extra innings.
0-2 to Couser, swung on, skied ball, left center field. Arozarena and Siri ranging out, and some miscommunication. Arozarena makes the catch, though. Hicks will come home. It's a sacrifice fly. Colton Couser gives the Orioles a 4-3 lead in the 10th. Lau a walk and hit by pitch. Bautista fires. Lau on the ground, throws to Gunner. Gunner to first, and they get a double play! The Orioles pull a double play, and Felix Bautista wraps it up. Two innings of work.
Felix Bautista is really the name that you need to know. As you hear on Orioles radio, they win in the 10th with a sacrifice fly for Colton Couser. But then Bautista is the one who pitches a perfect ninth and then stays on the mound into the 10th. He's actually now 5-1, but get this, no walks, no hits, no runners, three strikeouts through the two innings pitched, and Brandon Hyde can't say enough about his closer in this Orioles victory.
How about Felix Bautista? I'm so lucky to have him. He's just, the reason why he can pitch the 10th is because he has such an efficient ninth. You know, he throws under 10 pitches in the ninth inning after pitching yesterday, getting the save yesterday, goes out, has an easy ninth inning against the top of their order, and then allows us to, you know, if we score there, he's going to go back out. But he's amazing, and he does it again.
I love Brandon Hyde, but don't tell him that first place is a big deal in the month of July. Though I will tell you why it is, but first the skipper.
It's just July. That's kind of where I'm at right now. This team across is so good, and they're so hard to play, especially here. And it's such a momentum team, too. I mean, we've been on the other side of those type of games. I can't tell you how many times in my fifth year here where we'd lose those type of games. But we have Felix Bautista now.
Begin with Felix Bautista, end with Felix Bautista. Yeah, they're on top of the AL East. We saw it coming last year, but here's the part that I think is important to note. You have two forces at work. The Orioles are surging. The Rays are backpedaling. Baltimore was 6.5 games back of the Rays to start the month of July. So yeah, it may be just July, according to Brandon Hyde, but they have erased a 6.5 game deficit and gone a game up. They've made 7.5 games up in the standings since the month of July began. On this Friday morning, it's July 21st. So 3 weeks, essentially. That's it. That's what it took for them to erase 6.5 game deficit, but also get the leg up on the Rays. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for the Rays because they've watched not just their dominance in the division completely disappear, but that now in a dogfight in what is the toughest division in baseball. I mean, even the Toronto Blue Jays, though they had a couple of losses in there, they're winners of 7 of their last 10 and only 4.5 games back of the Rays now. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Kyle Gibson gives up 3 runs on 7 hits. He goes 6. Yeah, I think there should be excitement about the Orioles. It's the first time they've been in first place in their division after the All-Star break in 7 years.
Obviously, it feels good. You really never want to be the team chasing anybody. So hopefully we can keep playing well. Obviously, there's a lot of season left. But when you're playing good baseball against really good teams and you're coming out on top, it just seems to feel a whole lot better.
So still 10 days to go before the trade deadline. Another name I'm starting to hear, and it's not just Ohtani, another name I'm starting to hear more and more is Marcus Stroman. Was last night his final appearance for the Cubs? Kind of a bummer, too, because I know the Cubs had high hopes for him, but the NL Central as a whole has been a mess. The Cardinals actually have the longest win streak in baseball right now. But even that still leaves them 9 games below 500. They've won 6 in a row, 8 of their last 10. actually 9 of 11, I think is what I remember. And they're still 10 games out. And yeah, for the wild card, while it does keep more teams involved, even the wild card right now is not something that the Cardinals can kind of hold up and say, hey, let's make no changes at the deadline. Let's not be sellers because, look, we're only 8.5 games back. We're behind the Mets, for heaven's sakes. Sorry, Jay. In the wild card standings, the Mets.
I heard you.
The Mets with the most expensive payroll in the history of baseball. The Cardinals are behind them. So I guess here's the good news. Here's the silver lining, Jay. People aren't going to look at the Mets as the biggest failure in baseball this year. Why? Because the Padres, now they didn't spend as much money, but I would say they had higher expectations, the Padres. They thought they were putting the final pieces in place, right, with Xander Bogaerts and some of the other moves that they made. Now, they haven't even given their fans a reason to hope. It's not like the Padres have held out hope and then dropped their fans and, you know, into utter dejection. They never even bothered to show up to start the season.
No, they haven't got going at all this year.
I'm not even sure the Padres were ever above 500 this year. And if they were, it was brief.
You might be right.
So the Padres are ahead of the Cardinals in the wild card standings. But yeah, Cardinals, Mets, Padres, all huge disappointments.
Of all those three teams, I'm betting the Cardinals. If I was a betting man, I would bet the Cardinals to make the playoffs.
Really?
I really would.
I mean, there's four teams between them and the last wild card.
The Cardinals just seem to do this every year and just like have not even just come out of nowhere in August and September and go on a run.
There's no Albert Pujols to hit 20 home runs post All-Star break this year, though.
No, there is not.
That was so great last year. That's what they're missing. They're missing the excitement of Albert Pujols chasing 700.
The magic.
That was awesome.
They did all rally behind him in that entire storyline last season.
They did. It was so incredible. Remember, what did he have? 4 home runs before the break? 7 home runs before the break? It was so quiet around Pujols, but we were on it.
Mm-hmm.
From spring training, we were on it. We said it would be the storyline of the summer, and it was, along with Aaron Judge. Oh, now neither one of them is hitting home runs. Oh, dear. I know. It's just, it's not what you expected out of the 2023 baseball season. All right, coming up, the Commanders no longer belong to Daniel Snyder. Instead, he's got a $60 million check to write, if you do that sort of thing. I have no idea. And Josh Harris, who already owns part of the 76ers and the New Jersey Devils, has a stake now, a majority stake in the Commanders, but this purchase is personal. He'll tell you why coming up. And then a QB news at the back half of the hour because Aaron Rodgers. Oh, no, but that's not the biggest piece of news. Don't miss it. Bigger QB news in New York City than Aaron Rodgers. That's your tease following the update. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Good Friday morning to you here on CBS Sports.
Being a baseball play-by-play broadcaster demands a blend of learned mechanics, intense preparation, and a calm sense of entertainment. How hard is it to do this job? Let's talk to the ones who do it. This is Matt Spiegel. My new podcast, The PBP, Voices of Baseball, will bring those conversations to you as the best working and former broadcasters tell you why and how they do it. New episodes come every Thursday all summer long. Follow The PBP, Voices of Baseball, on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
We're very excited to get to work and to start the new era of Washington football. And we are humbled and awed by the level of responsibility that we have to take care of the city and to win championships and to, you know, really excite the fans again.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That is the voice of Josh Harris. Sounds like such an average Joe kind of a name. Average all-American boy, and yet he and 20 limited partners. He's the majority partner, the managing partner. He and 20 limited partners, 20 of them, are forking over $6.05 billion, I can't even say it, billion dollars to take over as the new owners of the Washington Commanders. $6.05 billion. Remind me, Jay, if you want to look it up really quickly, was it $4.65 billion for the Denver Broncos they sold at the beginning of last season? So it was maybe about a year ago, $4.65 billion.
Yep,
so
it.
In my naive brain, I was thinking, oh, yeah, well, the next time a franchise sells, it'll sell for $5 billion. Oh, nope. They kicked $5 billion to the curb and just went right over to $6.05 billion. Holy cannoli. Meanwhile, Daniel Snyder, who sold the franchise for $6.05 billion, has to pay a $60 million fine. Oh, I'm sure he'll feel that. He should be happy he's not on his way to jail. Though I suppose there could be charges still to come. But the Mary Jo White investigation is done as part of the Commander's sale. That investigation about the culture of the team, the sexual harassment, accusations by a team employee, that the team itself withheld revenue from the league, meaning the other owners don't come between the NFL owners and their money, then you got a problem. That investigation that was led by Mary Jo White, there was a finally, the findings were released on Thursday. And here's the fine against Snyder that's $60 million. It's 1% of the sales price. 1%. 1%. How does that hit him where he lives? It does not. Anyway, he was essentially reprimanded for not cooperating, other than a brief interview he did with investigators really toward the end. They finally got him to do a brief interview, but really didn't want to talk about anything, didn't want to give any incriminating evidence up. But I love the way Roger Goodell kind of ties a bow on it. The findings speak for themselves. Oh, he knows where his bread is buttered. He works for the owners. He knows how to diffuse the situation for the owners. That's why he makes so much money, is because he takes the flack and diffuses situations for his employees.
Thank you.
His employers, excuse me. Anyway, this investigation goes back 17 months. It included, you know, Daniel Snyder having to answer questions before Capitol Hill. And there certainly was a workplace culture that needed to be exposed. And Snyder would have been ousted by the owners if he didn't agree to sell on his own. But still, he makes out like a bandit. 1% of the sales price. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. I will say, though, it seems like all the owners who've spoken up, and there have been a bunch of them who've released statements, are thrilled with the addition of Josh Harris. I know this is really unfair of me, but wouldn't it be just so typical of a Josh Harris-owned team if they could not make it past the second round of the playoffs? Although I think right now the Commanders fan base would take... There's a bug in here flying around that keeps, like, running into
it's
me.
Landing on you?
Yeah, it's landing. Well, it's not landing. It's just, like, popping around and... Ah! It looks like a mini moth. It's not a mini moth because they probably don't make those, but it looks like a mini moth. It's flitting all around. It keeps running into my arm.
I just don't understand how these bugs. Insects get in here.
Maybe it's a fruit fly. Is there any fruit in here?
Maybe. Probably.
Oh. Someone left nasty food in here? Yes. Okay.
Sounds right.
Sorry.
But seriously, how did they get in here?
I have no idea.
It's like a casino in here. There's no windows. There's no... I mean, come on.
I wouldn't know. Okay, back to what I was saying about Josh Harris and winning in the second round. The Commanders fan base would be happy just to get to the playoffs right now. And Josh Harris has grand designs. He has a personal tie because... He grew up in the D.C. area, which I love. So this is not just about the Walton family, Walton Penner family, buying an NFL franchise to get in on the cash cow that the league is. No, this is Josh Harris wanting to be part of the Commanders and wanting to see them return to their former glory.
One of my first memories as a child was walking down East Capitol Street, walking into RFK Stadium, hearing the roar of the crowd, you know, feeling the rumble. I grew up watching Sonny Jurgensen, Billy Kilmer, Joe Theismann, Mark Rippon, Doug Williams, you know, the Hogs, Joe Gibbs, Daryl Green, Art Monk, and three Super Bowls. And I remember that's the Washington, then Redskins, now Commanders that I remember. This franchise is part of who I am and who I've become as a person.
Now, see, that appeals to me as someone who has a very active sentimental streak. That appeals to me, and I can imagine it means something to him, too. So how do you do it? How do you turn this team, which goes through seven quarterbacks a year and has seen some tough days, under Daniel Snyder, to be sure, but it's not as though you can repair all of that with a brand-new owner in an instant. So how do you do it?
We'll have more to say in the days that come, but today I want to leave it here. To our team and the incredible fan base in Washington, a new era of Washington football is here. It's time to get to work.
A new era is here. That's true. And from what I hear, Commanders fans who've reached out, longtime Washington fans, so Redskins fans who've reached out, this is what they wanted because they felt like the Snyder ownership, which does go back to the late 90s, it was toxic. He was dishonest, apparently with his fellow owners as well. His motives were not really about winning. And I'm not sure if you all heard this, but he wasn't a Commanders coach, but former Washington coach Jay Gruden did an interview on the Kevin Sheehan show in which he talked about the way that Daniel Snyder made decisions.
I think you have to be happy, without a doubt. I think moving forward with a new owner will be very beneficial for this organization. I just think Dan made it too much about himself as far as trying to put his stamp on the team as far as picking players and coaches and some of the things. And he wasn't experienced enough in the business to make those decisions. He didn't put the work in. For him to pick a player in a draft is asinine because he didn't put the work in. He didn't watch the players. He didn't go to the meetings. He didn't sit in the scout meetings. You know, Mike Brown with the Cincinnati Bengals, I was there. Mike Brown sat in every meeting and he watched the film. He put the work in. So when he made a decision, it was based on what he saw, what he took in from the coaches and what he took in from the scouts. So I respected that. I don't respect the guy who comes in and doesn't watch the film and makes picks and tells you who to sign in free agency. It makes no sense. When we're doing all the film work and the scouts are doing all the work, and all of a sudden he comes in and makes a pick. So I think it's going to be a very beneficial move for all the fans and for the organization moving forward.
Jay Gruden, former Washington head coach on the Kevin Sheehan show, and maybe he does have a bit of a grudge that he's holding or an axe to grind with Daniel Snyder, but his idea is, hey, you're meddling where you have no expertise. You're being involved just for the sake of being in charge. The only thing I would say in response is when he's your boss and he signs the checks, isn't he allowed to? If the team is owned by him primarily, and he did, I don't remember exactly when it was, but he did take over primary ownership there. I guess there was a group and then, you know, not too long ago, he became the sole owner. It is his prerogative to do that. Now, does that translate into wins? Does it translate into championships? Well, no, it hasn't. I can understand the beef. Josh Harris has a personal stake, which means it matters to him. More recently, Steve Cohen purchased the Mets for, I forgot how much, $4 billion? I guess that's really not why I bring it up. He's a longtime Mets fan. He loves the Mets. And he's willing to put his money where his mouth is, whatever it takes. It hasn't yet worked out. So I'm not sure if an owner who is personally involved in decision making is always the best way to go. A lot of these guys are businessmen, not necessarily guys who possess an acumen in their particular sport, whether football or baseball. I mean, Steve Ballmer, he loves the Clippers, as in loves the Clippers.
And toilets.
Well, when you need a good toilet, I don't know how you can go wrong with getting excited about toilets. But he loves the Clippers. And so when it's an owner who's also a super fan, sometimes maybe. See, there's the bug. Do you see the bug? Do you see the bug? There it goes, up there into the lights.
He eluded me. He'll come back.
What a good word. Almost as good as Jay using asinine. It's a great word. All right. We'll see how it works out. But I am happy for Commanders fans that they have someone who cares about the franchise for more than just its earning potential. Although there is plenty of that in the NFL. Speaking of, first few days of training camps in Dubuque's. Of course, Aaron Rodgers holding court. And he's so happy. He's just so happy with his new love. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. But as I teased before, that's not the number one story on their upcoming QB news. No, sir, Aaron Rodgers, you're going to have to wait.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Murray back to throw. And it is. Is it tossed? Oh, my goodness, it's tossed. DeAndre Hopkins caught it.
Dapper from under center. Steps back. Throws the fade.
Cooper Kupp got it. Touchdown, LA.
Burrow back to throw. Looking. Firing deep for Chase in the end zone. Oh, he's got it.
Yes.
Touchdown. Joe Burrow and the Bengals.
Mahomes fires for the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. Kansas City.
And off to Eckler again. No. Herbert keeps it. End zone. Touchdown. Chargers. Herbert with his second of the day.
Here's the snap. Josh going to keep it himself and run it again inside the five. Into the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo. Josh Allen, 9-yard touchdown run. The Bills respond and then some.
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
Before we get to Aaron Rodgers, who is holding court with the Jets this week as he begins his first training camp in New York. New place for him. The biggest QB news on the planet is that the Cincinnati Bengals will induct former NFL MVP, longtime quarterback Boomer Esiason into their Ring of Honor.
Third and 10, 51 seconds, 3:51, I should say, remaining here in the half. And Esiason with a lot of time going long. Brown is open. He's got it, and he is gone. Derek Burrows got completely turned around, and Eddie Brown cashed in.
Watch Boomer Esiason roll out to the left. Now, for most quarterbacks, that would be a hard throw, but he's a left-hander, so he's rolling out. He's looking for Collinsworth. There's the pass. Now, watch Burrows come in here. He just misjudges it. He was beat. He should have made the tackle on the play at least.
You heard the name Chris Collinsworth in there, too. Boomer played with the Bengals for 10 years, helped them win the AFC Championship in the 88 season. He was the MVP then and also, of course, went to a Super Bowl and nearly won it. We've heard that story here on After Hours. He's one of our friends, one of our buddies, always been very good to me personally. So congratulations to Boomer.
I was all about the beefcake, boys.
Yeah,
I wasn't about the acting.
Yeah, yeah. Was a guest on the Mannings not that long ago. He'll be inducted into the Ring of Honor during the September 25th game against the Rams. It will air on Monday Night Football. Once again, congratulations to our friend Boomer. It is long overdue. All right, fine, Aaron Rodgers. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. First training camp with the New York Jets. And, of course, they had to hold a press conference because he's so happy.
It's the energy. You know, I love being around the young energy, that excitement. There's a great feel to this team of guys who are young and super talented on their first contract, many of them. Obviously, Q just got paid, but when you have so many great players on rookie deals, it's pretty exciting knowing you can do something, you got a good window. It's not just a one-year thing where you can be competitive, which is fun.
He refers to Quinnen Williams getting paid when he says Q. Yeah, there's just a lightness in his voice. He's so happy. I think he's the king of New York right now. And if they would win, that superstar power will only increase, right? But he says he's got to be the grizzled veteran and make sure that the young guys are towing the line.
When I was a young person, I remember playing or watching basketball and seeing Tree Rollins, who was a player coach. And I don't look at myself like Tree in that scenario, but I do know that being an older player on the team, that's part of their responsibility is to teach a little bit more. Luckily, this is a great staff that Nate has hired on the offensive side of the ball. I know the offense really well. Been enjoying the conversations and testing the guys every single day because I don't like wasting reps. So if we're going to be out here, whether it's a walkthrough rep or an individual rep, let's make sure we're getting something out of it. Today we had quite a few, you know, little issues, and now we can go back and watch them and talk about them. And as long as we fix them, though, then we're moving in the right direction. When we're not fixing those things, then we have some issues. I think it's always important to have patience in shorts and helmets, have patience the first few days of camp. Sometimes the patience can wear thin if it's repeat mistakes, but we're just building this thing right now. We want to build it the right way.
He does have familiarity with the offense, also has familiarity with Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb and other former Packers who have now made their way to New York. And Lazard tells this story about the waiting game. Oh, gosh, the fans can certainly identify with this. And that he was not quite so patient as Rodgers was.
There's probably like a 8-hour period of time where I'm like, what the f***, bro? And he was like, it's going to happen. And I was just like, all right, you know, we obviously had a very deep conversation and talked about the possibilities of where he would go, where I would go. There's probably like a 8-hour.
No, I definitely want to hear it again. What the bleep, bro? What the bleep?
There's probably like a.
All right.
Eight-hour really period of time where I'm like, what the f***, bro?
Yeah.
Maybe earlier in my career, I was a little more easily angered, and I feel like I'm a little less triggered as I've gotten older.
Triggered. You are the definition of triggered. Anytime anyone questions anything that you do, you are triggered. It's fine. It's totally fine.
And that's fine. It really is. It's totally fine.
We know that it doesn't roll off his back like a duck. However, if he's more patient now, I'll give him that. I'm definitely more patient than I was when I was, what do you say, a young person? When I was a young person.
I was searching for a deeper level of self-love.
That's why he's become a more patient, older person. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. All right, what are we doing next? Okay, moving on. Asante Samuel, this is so funny. When Jay and I decide that every few months he trots himself back out onto a podcast, former Patriot cornerback, and blasts Bill Belichick. Well, the latest is the All Things Covered podcast, which is actually a couple of our, well, it's Patrick Peterson, but it's also Brian McFadden, who's with CBS Sports HQ.
Is he the best coach in NFL history?
Absolutely not. Are you crazy?
Why not?
Well, look at his record without Tom. You got to win without Tom.
So you're
One
telling
thing
me.
I learned about being great, you got to be great in different situations. It was all Tom. I was there. I saw it. It was Tom. Everybody know it. Tom know it. But he ain't going to admit it because he want to be politically correct. That's why I'm here.
That's why
I'm going to tell the truth.
And you're not afraid.
And I never.
And you got experience to talk the truth.
Because I've been there. I've seen it. I confronted him. And we've been through it. And that's how I do.
It's the best when Brian's egging him on.
We don't have time for that.
Former Patriots cornerback does not believe that Bill Belichick had anything to do with the success of the Patriots for a 20-year span.
What do I look like?
I'm a football coach. I'm not a doctor. Oh, my gosh. I miss Bill Belichick. It's almost time. It is. It's almost time.
Bye.
All right. I didn't miss you that much. Hey, we promised this on our last show, and somehow I messed up, and Jay and I lamented it for 24 hours. Finally getting to it. Also on the All Things Covered podcast, listen to Brian egg on Justin Fields when he asked them the top five rushing quarterbacks of all time.
Being a historian of the game, watching the game, mm-hmm. If you had to rank your top five quarterbacks in regards to running.
In regards to running?
Yeah. All right. You can throw yourself in the list too.
Oh, I am. Because I definitely think I am.
Okay, so start with Justin. He's in the top five.
I'm definitely in the top five, no order, but I got to go with
my boy Mike Vick.
Yep.
Got to go with Cam. Lamar, of course.
Yeah.
Me, and then final, Steve Young.
Steve Young. No Randall Cunningham in there? No, John Elway was a pretty damn good rushing quarterback, though he obviously didn't rush first. Interesting. It's a recency bias. If Justin,
I'm not 32.
If Justin Fields is in the top five all time after, what is it, three seasons?
Two, I think.
He didn't even finish last season healthy, for heaven's sakes. All right. I just lost our sports coverage in here. Apparently the storm has descended upon New York City because our DirecTV signal is lost. Yes, all things covered. Bryant McFadden, he's having fun getting the juice out of Justin Fields and Asante Samuel. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in one more. Steve Keim, he was a guest on The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Former Cardinals GM, explaining why Kyler Murray is facing a ton of pressure. Duh.
When he added the word "but" in, generally behind a positive, the word "but" does not end in a positive light. So I certainly didn't want to hear that. And nor do fans want to hear a guy who's making $46.1 million a year blame anybody but himself. And I'm not saying that he's a guy that blames people. Yet at the same time, you know, everybody, when you get that bag of cash, everybody expects you to take it on your shoulders. And that's what a franchise quarterback does. And this is a big year. I would have actually had Kyler in my top five for guys under pressure, because if they do have a tough year, he's coming off an injury. And also, Colin, you got to understand, he's coming off the injury. He's got to prove himself. And then if what happens is what people forecast, which they have the number one pick, they're in a real predicament.
$46.1 million per year. Tore the ACL. Cardinals sucked last year. And he says, this is the quote from Kyler, "I'll be coachable, but we all have to look in the mirror if it isn't working." That triggered Steve Keim.
It's too hard.
All right, we've lost our coverage of the Open here in studio on USA Network. However, we do know that Brian Harman, American Brian Harman, is on a tear, minus four already today through seven holes. He's sitting at minus eight, a three-shot lead over the guys that are behind him. Rory McIlroy, he's made up one stroke, so he's in red numbers now as well. And this is round two of the Open Championship. Women's World Cup, Team USA making its debut tonight. We're back on Sunday night. Have a great weekend. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!